We are, of course, at Shabbat Vayera, and he appeared. The Torah portion this morning came from Bereshit, Genesis 21, 1 through to 7. From the Haftarah, it was the second book of Melachim, Kings, and that was 4, 1 through to 7. From the Masoretic writings, the wonderful section there in the, what we could describe as the open letter to the Jewish community, to all Jewish communities of all time, so-called Book of Hebrews. But basically, this is about us as Jews and what we need to know. And it begins there in chapter 11, 8 through to 19, that lovely section, through chapter 11 of the faith of our patriarchs and matriarchs, the greats in our hall of fame in Jewish history, and how they responded and reacted. And of course, Abraham sits at the very heart of all of this as well. And yet, we come to this portion, I suspect, certainly I do, every year we get to this Torah portion and shudder somewhat. I'm going to read the words which always, I think, brings to a standstill. It wasn't that long ago, Rosh Hashanah, we were discussing this, but I wonder if we're coming back to it again now, and it starts, this is in chapter 22. And Abraham has gone off according to the commandment of Adonai to take his son. He rose early, saddled his donkey, he takes his son Yitzhak, splits the wood, rises, goes to the place where God had told him. The people stay with the donkey, takes his son forward, he prepares the wood, takes his son, puts his son on the wood, taking the fire which he had carried up that mount with him, and a knife. And the son says, look, you know, the fire, the wood. But Dad, where's our burnt offering? And Abraham says, my son, God will provide for himself this offering. And the two go, and they came to the place of which God had told him. And Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order, bound, tied him, the son, to the wood in order, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand, and he took the knife to slay his son. How can you not read that and be appalled, shocked? How can you read that and not be moved? How can you see that happening before our very eyes in the scriptures and ask ourselves the question, what on earth is going on? I want to take you on a thinking journey a little bit this morning with these thoughts. We've discussed this passage really, I think, so many times in the last 30 years that we've been going through it, but I think this year I kind of connected with it again in a completely new way. I read the passage and it was not just what was happening, it was how the son was feeling at that moment, being fully submitted to his father. It was how the father was feeling in all of this as well. Poor father Abraham. I mean, he had many tests. Traditionally, there were 10 tests which he went through, all of which he passed. And you know, it'd be so easy, wouldn't it, at this point, just to laud his achievements spiritually and in faith, as we're reading there from the book of Hebrews, and just say, yep, that's the man. This is the man of God. His total persona, wrapped up in faith and confidence of God. And each test that the Lord threw at him, he passes it with flying colours. But this is not just the man of God, I think, that we see here. This is the man who was desperate for a son. Prayed, longed for a son. But had a word from God that he would have a son. And finally, after much prayer and seeking God and anguish, he has the son that he has longed for, prayed for, a desire in his heart to be the one that God had promised. And just as his son is beginning to grow up, and the father, Abraham, is looking at this boy and thinking, this is the future. This is what God is going to do. And at that moment, God tells him to kill him. This was the son who was to be the link in this special nation that God was going to build. You think at that moment, and I'm sure that Abraham did God change his mind? What's gone wrong? I thought I understood. I thought this was right. I thought this was the plan of God. How can I put to death the very son that you have given me? The one who is to be the nation to come from me that you promised, that you said was going to happen, and now you're literally asking me to kill this vision and purpose of my life that you called me for. You're actually telling me to put it to death. I can only imagine his inner turmoil. Nothing makes sense at that moment in Abraham's mind. It seemed, as I was contemplating this, the whole scenario that is before our eyes at that moment is set up to apparently undermine any faith or belief in the mercy and kindness, the very essential goodness of God, when God tells you to kill your son. You think God is kind? You think God is good? What is God doing? Why would the Lord lead him to a situation that was destined to end in such tragedy for both Abraham and Sarah, the parents in all of this, who had waited so long to get to that point? And let's not forget, we read at the end of that chapter, when you get to the beginning of chapter 23, we read of how Sarah, utterly heartbroken because she saw what was going to happen, wanders off, doesn't she, on the road to Hebron, the land of Canaan. She died in Kiryat Arba, according to tradition, heartbroken because the very son that she had longed for and received from Adonai, she thought was dead. She goes off and dies. This is what happens. And that's just for Abraham and Sarah. Just think how Yitzhak. You want trauma? You want childhood trauma in your life? Bound to a stack of wood? About to die in the flames as your father hovers over you with a knife? The worst event that any parent can possibly ever imagine is losing your child. And at that moment, I can't even imagine how Abraham squared that in his head. You are the parent of the one who is taking that life of your child. And you'd be forgiven if you didn't question if this was the God you knew. That somehow maybe the wires have got crossed, they've misheard the command. This couldn't be the God who called me from my ancestral home. This can't be the same God. This God is different. I must have misheard. I've got confused. I've gone on the wrong track. And fundamentally, I think in the heart of all of this event, as bizarre actually as it is, and I don't think you can dress this up in any other way, the question that lurks for us as Jews, the question that lurks for us who actually value the scriptures as inspired, a record of real history at the heart of our Jewish nation and people, recorded for us not just as history, but as something that we should learn from as Jews. There's a fundamental question around this event that rocks our understanding of God and the universe. Why would God even demand a child sacrifice? And there's no way around it. I can't dress this up in any other way. The commentaries are full of hand-wringing. People saying it's okay because the non-execution of it justified the means it didn't happen, so it's all right, so therefore we can let God off the hook. We cannot do that. The damage was done. The boy was on the wood. The command was already uttered to do this. And you can backtrack and say it's okay because it all ended up, it's all right in the end. God still told him to do this, even if it never ultimately happened. The sheer suggestion that the slaying of this boy by commandment of God flies in the face of all the mitzvot we can think of, it is frankly beyond mitzvot. And this is the key that takes us, I think, to a place of a deep reckoning in our walk with the Lord. I think if we ever square our spiritual walk and our walk with the Lord, if we square that life we have with Him with this event, then we will discover a depth of understanding and a walk with the Lord that we've never seen before. This is not for the faint-hearted. It is there. It is in the Bible. You've got to face this. And what God is saying through all of this. And what we come to understand when we face an event like this is that we can never, and we will never, be able to fully understand God with our human reckoning and reasoning. You will never understand God. You will never get to that point where you have so fully understood Him that you will understand that when He does X tomorrow, you'll think, yep, that's good, that's in line, that's good. Doesn't stop us trying. Just for a moment, if I may, I just want to put the famous Rambam in the dock, you know, using his Aristotelian and Platonic thought that he was steeped in and understood in, was trained in, to unpack Judaism. He did a very good job of it, as you know. But it was Rambam making statements that God has no form, corresponding with the pure spirit ideas of rational thinking and understanding. Nonsense when it's clear that in the Tanakh, God does take many forms. But if you try and bring your rationalism, try to bring your human understanding, your philosophies, rational thinking, call it what you want, you try to bring any of this to bear upon trying to understand God and how He acts and who He is and what He does in our lives, you will fail. And who is Maimonides to say to God, you have no form? Who is he? Ultimately, a mere man. What mere man would stand before God and say no? Not like that. You cannot box God into anything that we can understand. You know, our intellectual pursuit of God, our need to comprehend Him will never work, but we still persist in our black and white truth and untruth philosophies, the dichotomies that we set ourselves up, because that's how we've been trained to think. This is good and nothing else is bad and this and that. We see all of this, and yet the reality, I have to say, is that I see God so often acting in the grey areas, in the cracks between the worlds, in ways that I would not want Him to act. It offends me. It shocks me at times. I don't want God to be God like that. I want God to be nice. I want Him to be in a box. I want Him to be the nice God of love that I can take off the box off the shelf occasionally and give a hug to and a cuddle and put back. That's the God I actually want when it comes down to it. A God who's actually going to act as God and shock me and offend me and upset me and take me to places that I don't want to go to. He's going to challenge me, bring crises into my life that simply I don't want there. Is that the God I want? If I'm being honest with you, it's not the God I want. You cannot box God in. I want to put an even more radical thought in front of you today on the basis of all of this. You cannot even box God into the mitzvot. Now that may shock you. If you're used to thinking that the complete list of the mitzvot that we've got, all 613 or however many numbers of them there are, depending which way you count them, if you think when you've got to the end of that 613 commandments, you've got, and that's it, that is God. Well, I've got news for you. It isn't. It isn't. It can never be. The mitzvot that we've got only ever express the nature and character of God as we see in his own list of his 13 attributes of who he is. But I want to put it to you, they are far from exhaustive in that way. Someone even added up once in the Messianic writings how many commandments there are. On a rough count, they came in at something well over 1,000 they managed to count, just in the Messianic writings. Many of them, of course, repeated from the Tanakh and the Torah, as you'd expect. But a lot of others as well. These are far from exhaustive. And if we limit God to the mitzvot, then we are surely placing boundaries on him to act as he sees fit within his nature and character. And this brings us to a point of trying to understand when God acts, when he does something, when he chooses to act in this way and not that way, when he gives us a commandment which expresses his character. At that moment, we are together with the meeting of worlds, the spiritual and the physical interface. Because the mitzvot are always going to be an imperfect match in the physical to the eternal spiritual righteousness of God. How could you have a commandment, a single commandment of love, to express love? How could you ever bottle that down into one commandment? You can't, can you? But if you know what love is, it will guide you and steer you to act and do and say and operate in ways within the understanding of that. And this is what I'm trying to say, is that by just having a list, we end up actually boxing God. The list is great, don't get me wrong. But if we think just with that list that we've understood who God is, then we're boxing God in. He's not a list. We place boundaries upon him. And the mitzvot are fluid in all of this. This is why we, in the mitzvot, we don't just have an expounding written down and that's it, fixed for all time, they cannot change. The mitzvot are there to express the character and nature of God in our lives, which is fluid, it is spiritual, it is eternal, the fullness of which is awesomely huge if we have eyes and ears and hearts to understand it. But it does not limit God. Who are we to say to God that you can act this way but you cannot act that way? We do not give you permission to act like that. And it's not that anything goes. It's not what I'm saying. If you're hearing accurately, you'll hear that I'm not suggesting that it's an anarchic free-for-all. Everything God does is wrapped up in his nature and his character, just as the mitzvot and the commandments are. But I'm saying God is bigger than who we think he is. God is free to act in ways that he deems necessary to act. And if we are offended by that, then he will still do it. Because God is God, and we cannot, we must not stand there and say, up to that line, please God, and no further. Because then I'm going to be upset. If that's the God you follow, then he is not your God. Because God is able to do whatever he wants to do in your life. And right now, we're faced with the reality of what God did. It is shockingly awful, challenging, a crisis to our understanding of how God acts and behaves, or should act and behave in our lives and what we see. And that's where we discover that actually it's by faith we understand, not by sight, not by lists of commandments, but by knowing God through faith and trust. It's not by what we think God is that is the reality. It's by faith God is. That is why Abraham took his son to die. I think a reality comes out of this encounter, from this event, which suggests to me that Abraham's view of God was truly eternal, truly awesome, truly without boundaries, unhindered, unlimited, unrestricted by Abraham's thought processes, his rationale and his thinking and his own way of looking at the world. At that point, his faith had taken into a fluidity of pureness in the spirit where God was utterly God. Anything was possible. In fact, as Hebrews says, doesn't it? Even accepting, should I kill him, God will raise him from the dead. Now, we can just put that on the basis of faith. I think this is way more than just faith. I think there's an image and an understanding of God at this point for Abraham which frankly blows our minds. He deeply knew who God was. On paper, this was always going to be a ludicrous suggestion to slay his son, the one that God had promised him. At that point, you leave your human logic at home. And you get on the donkey and you ride. Because there is no logic to this. There's no way you're going to work this out. There's no rationale. There's no obvious wisdom. There is literally no viable human justification for such an act. It is beyond human justification. But God is not tied to our views and our rationale, nor our developed theological ways of looking at the world. Thank God that he's not tied to our ideas. Faith embraces the often crazy situations that we struggle to comprehend in our lives. And we face them. We're not all people like here who have got our sons tied on an altar. And yet we do face situations in our lives at times when we look at this, we just say, really, God? Really? This? How? Now? Why? I don't understand. There's no logic to it. There's no rationale behind this. This is so far out of left field that I never saw it coming and now it's here. I don't even get it. And you struggle to understand. And yet all the while knowing that God does understand. Because we are not God. We don't see under the hood. It's not that we suspend belief or our minds when we're grappling to understand who God is and how he acts in our lives. No, we're not asking you to switch off our brains. But we don't allow our thinking, our rational process of logic or trying to work out, we don't allow that to dictate in our faith lives. Faith allows us to walk forward with the Lord, not our reasoning. It's faith that at that moment when it seems insane to do what you're about to do, it is faith that makes you take that step. That is real faith. When everything in your head screams, this is illogical, this is stupid, this is irrational, this is against what I know to be true, this is against how I understand the world to work. And at that point you step out and you find the water is solid. That's what it is. And our walking with the Lord so often, isn't it so similar to what we're describing in all of this? So often it feels like God is holding a knife over our lives. In ways that we just simply struggle with. We don't get it. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel good. It's not right, Lord. It's not just, Lord. It's not fair, Lord. Because we don't get it. But God does. And yet if we let God be God, finally, ultimately, it will make sense. It only made sense for Abraham when the angel says, whoa, stop. That's when it begins to make sense for Abraham. But he would never have heard that word stop if he hadn't bound his son on the altar and taken the knife in his hand, showing God he was fully intending to go through with that act. And that is the conclusion of all the commentators. He wasn't playing a game. Abraham was going to do it. Shocking. His wife certainly believed he was going to do it. She walked up the road and died, heartbroken. And we can talk about this as a theoretical concept. Imagine you as a father, a mother, and if God told you today, take your child into the back garden and kill them. Make it real. Would you do it? How well do you know God at that point? These are not easy questions. But Judaism doesn't give us easy questions. We're dealing with an eternal, pure, righteous, holy God who is so beyond our human comprehension, our ability to understand him, that if we say that we really do fully understand him, then we are lying and deceiving ourselves. He will not, cannot act out of character to himself, but he will not be restrained by our limited understanding of the mitzvot as the expressions of it. He will not be restrained by our minds and expectations of how we think he should act, of what we think he should do. He will not be restrained by that. If he were to be restrained by it, he would be God on a puppet string, with us holding the strings. And he wouldn't be God. And you know what? There are times when God is going to mess up your lives. There will be times when he'll put you in situations that you should not know. We say cannot be, and yet it is. He will destroy your expectations. He will challenge the easy comfort of your habitual righteousness. He will remove the narrow physical restraints of your minds to finally reveal his real righteousness to you. He will destroy the barriers that are holding you back in understanding him. And he will destroy them, and he will watch while it's painful, just as it was for Abraham. And he will feel your pain, but he will know the necessity of it all. He goes beyond what we want and expect, blows your predictions of his behavior out of court, leaving us astonished and shocked again and again. His provision of the ram, in this example here, at least does it not allow us to mop our fevered moral brows and go, narrow miss. But that's not really the point either. The roller coaster ride was real. It is real for us, day in, day out. Situations that you should think in your life, this cannot be the case. This cannot be happening to me. This doesn't fit my expectations. This is not what I think righteousness is, or what goodness is, or what I want it to be. And God says, but I'm doing it anyway. And you're the one who's going to have to shift your mind, because you're the one who's not understanding. God will not be boxed. We may be traumatized, we may be intimidated by what God does. I'm sure Abraham and Isaac certainly were that day. He may even turn your theology upside down, inside out. But if you fight it, you will miss the joy of the full comprehension and understanding at the end of it all. And if you deny the Lord that space in your life to act as he wants to, what you will end up doing is accepting a fake joy of self-vindication and self-justification for your views of where you stand and what you think is right. It is a fake joy. It's a joy based on what you think it should be, rather than a joy on what God is actually doing. The knife does not have the final word in all of this. It's only once we see the bigger picture that we begin to understand what is truly going on here. Abraham rejoiced to see my day, said Yeshua, didn't he? The bigger picture in all of this is of a son who did die. This time round there was no ram caught in a thicket. This time round those nails went straight through the nerve bundles of his wrists. This time round the dagger went straight through his ribcage, puncturing his heart. Blood and plasma pouring out. This time round the beatings, the whippings to within a centimetre of death before he was hung up on that execution stake, all happened. And Yeshua did die. And just as Abraham believed, God can raise his son from the dead. It happened. To prefigure what God was doing all the way through this. And I want to put it to you today. If you're watching and you're thinking, but, I'm challenging you today. Do not let the narrowness of your rationalism and your mind and the boxed logic of human thinking restrict what God can and has done. Because it is profound, if you've got eyes to see it. We cannot as Jews say, God, you cannot do this. You cannot come dressed in the flesh, clothed as a man. You cannot do that. It doesn't fit. It's not right. It's not what I'm expecting of you. And you certainly can't go on to die on an execution stake with the agony and the pain and the excruciating being separated from Father in heaven. You can't do that. It's not right. It doesn't fit my theology. It doesn't fit my understanding. It's too traumatizing. I can't see it. I can't receive it. I can't accept it. God, you can't do that. As Pharaoh said, who is this God that I should serve him? You can't do that, God. I don't want you to do that, God. It doesn't fit my theology. It doesn't fit my level of Jewish thinking and understanding. It doesn't fit this. It doesn't fit that. I don't get it. You cannot. You shouldn't. You mustn't. Arcada. He did. He breaks every human logic and understanding. At this moment, he shatters it all to tell us, do not limit God's power in acting as he wants to do. To almost, as it were, pre-configure our minds in the spiritual realm, that when Yeshua was sent, that we would go, ah, yeah, I get this now. Yeah, it doesn't fit my rational picture, but I understand what God is doing. He sent us a heads up with Isaac. He said, this is coming. It'll blow your mind. Every bit of Jewish bit in your head is going to scream, no! Just as it did here. But God is not doing what we want him to do. God does not act in ways that we think he should. He's not acting beyond the bounds of righteousness. He's not acting outside of his own character and nature to send his son to die for us. He's exactly acting within his character and nature to do so, because he is love. And even if we can't comprehend that, even if we truly don't get that, to the depth of that love that would drive that act in history, even if we don't fully comprehend it, God does it anyway. Because he's not waiting for us to understand it. What he wants is for us to experience it. To know it in our lives. To know that final, ultimate forgiveness of sin is there because he did this. And he sent us an email beforehand through Isaac to say it was going to happen. Did you bother to read the email? It's been in there all the time. It's been in the intro. And yet we read it and said, yeah, but God can't do it. He mustn't do it. He shouldn't do it. We have no right to dictate to God how he acts. Now I know I have, and you have, and many of us have in this congregation, and I'm sure if you're listening and watching, you too, at some point in your lives, have been through situations which have been so against the grain of what you thought, what you expected was going to happen, how it was going to be, how you saw the future unrolling, in ways that you just didn't get, you didn't understand, it just couldn't be, shouldn't be, mustn't be, and yet God did. Now you can either dictate to God at that point and say, this stops now. You can't do this to my life. Or you embrace it in faith. And you take hold of that shock, you take hold of that offence, you take hold of it and go, I don't get it, but I know you do. And I know that you will never act out of your nature and character. And I will not box you into my own human rational understanding and my philosophy, my logic of this is this and that is that, and it cannot and will not and must not ever change. If you do that, you are boxing God in. Thank goodness that none of us did that the years back when we came into Messianic Judaism, because if you'd taken that line of God is doing this and nothing else, you wouldn't be sitting here today. Because God came in, didn't he? And blew it all out the water. All of your understanding. The moment that little whisper in your ear is and the Lord told you, oh, and by the way, Yeshua is Jewish. And then your life suddenly changed. But you know, if you box God in, you're not going to change at that point. You're going to be going, no, I know what it is. Do not box God in. This is what Arcata teaches us. This is what we learn through the binding of this son. If we ever restrict what God is doing, we are going to miss the way deeper picture of it all. He will not be unfaithful to himself. He will not break his covenants. He will not step out of who God is, who he is. He cannot. But if we think just by walking around with a list of commandments that we've got him sewn up, then we are deceiving ourselves. He's way more than that. This proves he is way more than that. I don't see anywhere in the 613, you know, the child sacrifice is okay, and if God tells you to do it, you should go ahead and do it. I don't read that. God has a permission in our lives to do things which at times are going to shock us and offend us. Don't push him away. Don't restrain God's actions in your lives by your limited understanding because it ticks your theological boxes. God isn't interested in ticking your theological boxes. He will do what he does. And he sends Yeshua Mashiachenu to us, acting fully within the full love offering that God brings into our lives. In so many ways, walking utterly contrary to our expectations. And I'm sure in the first century that those Jewish followers of Yeshua did not expect this. They didn't see that one coming. And afterwards they were shocked and stunned and were struggling and they couldn't understand. Because it went against all the thinking which they had learned up to that point. But God did it anyway. And God's word to them was, keep up. Keep up. This is what's happening now. Do you follow God or do you follow your own understanding of things? Maybe someone's been telling you all your life that Yeshua cannot be the Mashiach because God would never come in human form. You are limiting God. That may shock you to hear that this morning, but it's true. God is not going to follow your limited understanding of who he is and what you think he can and cannot do. He's going to do it anyway because he is God. Embrace what he's doing. Embrace what he's doing in your life right now. And I know people, some of you are going through difficult things. It may be contrary to your expectations, contrary to your wants and desires. Embrace it in faith. Know this, that while it may not make sense now, God is only operating in his will and in his character. And if you trust him, one day you'll wake up and it will make sense. And you'll be glad that you embraced it. That you didn't miss the real joy of knowing the depth that God can take you to through moments like this. Amen.